This episode is brought to you in part by Optimal Workshop. Optimal Workshop's UX research platform empowers you to build the world's best user experiences. Test, benchmark, measure, and make evidence-based decisions with confidence. Go to userdefenders.com/OW and try their powerful tools for free today. This episode is also brought to you by Springboard. Start a new job as a UX designer in just 6 months or your money back. With Springboard's UX Design Bootcamp course, you'll get unlimited one-on-one expert mentorship, work experience on real business projects, and a dedicated career coach. Stay tuned to hear how you can get $500 off your tuition.
I don't know that there will ever be world peace, but I still believe in the dream that technology can make the world a better place by enabling people to share, by removing the obstacles to communicating and sharing. And I'm glad to work in a place where I can do that. And I'm glad to work in a field, web design, that was started for that. Yes, we can do banking sites, but we started with people sharing documents. We started as cave paintings. I still love that, and that still inspires me. And I think we're still there. When I miss the past, I think, you know, we're still very much at the beginning.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview UX superheroes who fight for the users in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Welcome.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 66. I'm your host, Jason Ogle. If you've been a web worker for any length of time, there's one name that exudes web design authority and influence. That name is none other than Jeffrey Zeldman. That's why I couldn't have been more thrilled to dive deep with Jeffrey again, this time to get a pulse on the field of web design. With all the website building frameworks easily accessible to so many today, and of course the looming threat of AI wanting to do practically everything for us, including building websites, I specifically wanted to know, is web design dead? In today's episode, Jeffrey answers this very provocative question. He talks about the spirit of web design and what we can do to keep it alive. He waxes nostalgic on the Christopher Columbus levels of discovery and what it was like plowing a rugged path into the wild west of the World Wide Web. He also discusses his recent transition of going from unemployable agency owner to accepting his first full-time role at Automattic after 20 years. I also want to mention before we get to the episode that this October I get to record a live podcast episode at an Event Apart Denver. That is a conference that Jeffrey and Eric Meyer started over 10 years ago now. And it's one that I've really held in high esteem ever since my very first one back in 2008 in San Francisco. I am so honored to record a live podcast there and would love to invite you to not only be a part of that, but also the incredibly inspiring and enlightening event that is an Event Apart. This event takes place October 28th through 30th in the year of our Lord, 2019. Your department may very well have unused training budget left that must get used. Look into it, and if you need fuel for the fire, let your manager know they can save $100 off your registration using AEAUD at checkout. So go to aneventapart.com to learn more and register. And by the way, I'm a hugger, so every defender who comes out will get a big bear hug from yours truly. Okay, back to today's episode. This was a super special one that I can't wait to meta HTTP equiv refresh you to starting right now. All right, my guest today really needs no introduction. Jeffrey Zeldman is the godfather of web design. Do they still call you that, Jeffrey?
I think only I call me that, but thanks. Eric Meyer once called me the grandfather of web design, which I wasn't ready for that.
Well, you'll always be. I believe you'll always will be, and I hold you in that esteem myself, and I know many others do as well. You know, it's funny. Every so often, somebody will write an article that will say X is dead.
Oh, yeah.
UX is dead. Web design is dead. We like those clickbaity articles, it seems like. Some people like to write those, and we like to click on them.
Yeah.
Right? So today's conversation, and I remember when I first emailed you about this, Jeffrey, I said something to the effect of, in the subject line, like, web design is dead. I think that's what I put, just web design is dead in the subject line. And then in my opening body, I think I said, I know that chaps your hindquarters to see that. And I said, do you want to have a conversation about this? This field moves fast. And certainly there's always new things happening. And that's sort of the exhilaration and the sometimes intimidation of kind of keeping up or trying to keep up. I was kind of doing some research and I came across a quote from somebody that said something to the effect of building websites is now a commodity that often goes to the lowest bidder. Chances are if you build websites for clients for a living, you aren't getting their business because of your talents. Actually, there are very few web design firms that exist on the merit of their own design. I have a feeling that you find an argument with that. I do too. I have some arguments with that statement. It's very blanketed, but I felt like that's sort of what we're going to be talking about today. And of course, Mark Twain has been quoted saying, the rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated.
Yeah.
So is web design dead, Jeffrey?
So no. So let's back up. Okay. First of all, I remember getting Wired, buying Wired in 1994. And in 1996, I believe, they ran an article that said, the web is dead. Forget the web. Push is here. Right? And we're like, oh my, you know, the web was dead in 1996, right? We couldn't even do we could barely do background images. We didn't even have a design language, but it was dead. People have been saying this forever. And people have complained whenever there's any kind of technological evolution, when MIDI was introduced, right? Which allowed synthesizer players to program their music in advance and can multi-track digitally and all this other stuff. Joseph Zawinul, who was the keyboard player for Weather Report Kids, was a 70s jazz fusion band with Wayne Shorter, Jaco Pastorius, legendary players who'd played with Miles Davis and Cannonball Adderley. And they were expert musicians, let's say. And Zawinul used to do a thing where he'd wire his keyboards backwards and then play Bach fugues with his hands having to go backwards just to keep his brain limber. So there was this era when musicians had to be really good at playing their instruments. And then when MIDI came out, Zawinul was like, well, now any idiot can pull the trigger. People hated rock and roll when it came out. And then they said rock was dead. Rock was dead. The samba was going to replace it. So we love these kinds of stories. You know, we can't really grasp history while we're in it, right? So there have been absolutely been changes to the market over the past 5 years. There's no question of that. And if you're a freelancer with your own clients and you have good word of mouth and you keep getting referrals from those clients, web design isn't dead. If you're one of the top really smart agencies, like this vanguard of agencies that are really doing fantastic work, that contribute open source projects, share knowledge, and you have a big referral pipeline, web design's not dead. Web design didn't die when ad agencies started doing it for their clients. It took a hit because ad agencies weren't always, at least initially, that they didn't really see the web the same way web designers saw it and web people saw it. But web design didn't die. Web design didn't die when WordPress came out or when Squarespace came out. And there's plenty of agencies that aren't famous or renowned yet, but where they do really good work and have really good clients. And you may not have heard of them but they're all over the world. They're still working. So there's still a lot of work. There's less work. And there's a couple reasons there's less work. One is if you used to serve, say, Fortune 50 or Fortune 100 clients. Designers have done a very good job over the past 10 years of saying design is not something that you hire out. Design is a way of thinking. Design is something you need in-house. And clients said, okay, you're right. We need it in-house. And now there's lots of design teams in-house, whether you're a product company or not. Even if, you know, if you're an insurance company, you're not designing digital products per se, you still probably have a design team that works on your website. So a lot of that work isn't available to agencies. That doesn't mean web design is dead. It means it's being done by different people. or it's being done by the same people, but they don't have their own agency anymore. They work in-house now. Long as we're using the web to deliver information and products, and I buy things from Amazon and from online retailers and from little stores and from little artists that have their own little websites. I read newspapers and magazines online. There's a hoarder in my family. I don't want to be a hoarder. I want to read everything. I'm voracious, but I don't want to pile up magazines. Books, yes, I buy paper books whenever possible, but I don't really want to pile up a bunch of magazines. So I do that stuff digitally, and that's on the web. I do a lot of things that rely on the web. I use a lot of apps, but those apps still connect to websites. At some point, not only are they using the internet to for APIs and to transmit data, they also have some kind of web presence, right? Even Instagram has a website. It used to be just, a phone app. And it used to be that there was very, very limited usability if you tried to follow a link on the web. So if I used my phone and said, hey, here's a picture I took, and I shared that on Twitter using Twitter on my phone, and you're on your desktop and you saw that link and you clicked to go to Instagram, you'd pretty much hit a dead end that said, Instagram is a great app. Why don't you download it? You'd never be able to find the picture I'd shared. But they fixed that. Pretty much even the most app-centric, appity app apps still have some kind of web presence. And every business, they're not all great, but every business has documentation online. They do some of their call center work online. Sarah Parmenter's research shows introverts actually will wait and use chat so they don't have to talk to someone on the phone. And not that they don't like humanity or don't want to hear someone's voice, just they're emotionally more comfortable, feel safer using chat, which takes place on the website. So as long as businesses exist, as long as people are sharing information, the web exists and it's being made. Somebody's making it, right? Yeah. I do think that the market has dried up for a lot of studios and agencies. It's a very tough time to launch a new studio. It's a tough time for existing studios. A lot of my friends are moving in-house who used to have studios or work at agencies. And I myself this year moved to Automatic after starting Happy Cog in the 90s. And then after having a second studio, Studio Zeldman, in the teens, I just said, enough. I want to go in-house. And there's a lot of reasons for that.
Can you share some of the reasons that you decided to do that?
Sure. So one is just purely monetary, financial. The chase, constantly chasing new clients, it seemed like business pitches had slowed down. It used to be at my first agency, Happy Cog, during our heyday, which I think, by the way, I think they're having a second heyday. They have new owners. They're a fantastic agency. Highly recommend them. But in terms of my own involvement with the place, we would win a certain high percentage of things we were asked to pitch on that we liked, that we wanted to really pursue. I'm not saying they were magically given to us. I'm saying if we really liked them, we would work hard on our proposals and then win a fair number. And from the beginning of conversation to the awarding of the work usually took, a few months. And it seemed like it was taking a lot longer. So I was a single father. I live in New York, which is very expensive. I would have great months and I would have terrible months. And it started to wear on me that that this was not a way for someone my age and with my responsibilities that I just, I needed to put my family on a really good footing where there was, a guaranteed baseline income. I have a lot of freelance businesses. I have, a conference and a List Apart magazine and a book apart I'm a partner in. And some of those things don't make money and they're not supposed to. Some of them make money, but again, it's not a reliable stream. And like a lot of designers, I was finding that I would fly at my own expense and pitch something and we would be doing really well. And then in one job that was heartbreaking, we were up for a very, very really exciting project. And then the client basically told us, you're the people we want to work with. This is kind of in the bag. Not in the bag. They couldn't say that. But basically, yeah, you've got this. Then they went away to an organizational retreat for 3 weeks. And someone new came in and replaced them and wanted something completely different. And that happens all the time. People, yeah. You know, so I just thought, man, at my age, do I really want to deal with this? And then all the other reasons for taking a job at Automatic were Automatic. I mean, it's an awesome place. If you don't know, Automatic, founded by Matt Mullenweg in the 90s, is the makers of WordPress.com and related products, right? Like Jetpack and WooCommerce and some other, but it's a totally open source company. And all the communication happens in the open, whether on Slack or on these special blog posts we have at our company called P2. I don't know why they're called P2, except they're blog posts with extra functions that we engineered that are pretty cool. But it's a big tech company whose mission is to democratize publishing. And I thought, I'm definitely in favor of that. Automatic and WordPress.com, they're about owning your own content. I'm definitely about that. I looked at them and I was like,
yeah,
they don't spy on their customers. They don't sell their customers' data. I'm not saying there are definitely tech companies where at the very top and in their foundation, there's questionable ethics, ethical problems, just because they were established with no revenue model. And so eventually the investors want their money back, you know, fivefold. And that means, well, if we can stir up controversy and get more eyeballs and sell more ads, or if we can share this data. So, you know, I'm not going to name the companies. Everyone knows some of them. And and I'm not saying Automatic is perfect or flawless. No company is without sin. But Automatic, they have a creed. I will always keep learning. I will try to help others. They have a belief system, which is open source. Open source and open web are kind of my things, especially open web. Indie web, owning your own content. I mean, we make tools that help people do that. So, and they had a division secretly that was an agency inside Automatic that makes websites for selected clients. And I thought, yeah, why don't I do this? And the clients that we make websites for tend to be nonprofits, charities, startup organizations that we think are great, but don't really have the financing to necessarily get the website they deserve. Artists, musicians, Childish Gambino, just like writers, phenomenal people. It's a giving back activity. Automatic makes a certain amount of money, and we believe in WordPress, and we believe that WordPress can help people. And so we have this little agency, this little secret special projects team that makes websites for people who deserve them, that make websites for people who wouldn't necessarily have recourse to the high level of services that we can provide any other way. It's pretty great. Like, we have a lot of clients that I would dream about getting, and I don't have to pitch them. We have them, and I can bring clients in like for causes I believe in, and we just do the work. So
that's awesome.
So for me, it was the best of both worlds. I'm at a product company, and in a way I'm a product designer, but 90% of what I'm doing is still, well, I'm a creative director in a web design team inside a product company. So for me, it was just kind of a dream come true. And everybody I work with is super smart, super motivated. We have a high number of introverts in the company, just like in every web place I've ever been. So, in every design place I've ever been. So, yeah, I'm very happy. And there's a lot to do. And it's pretty great.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations, Jeffrey, by the way, for that opportunity. And they're lucky to have you. And I know you feel lucky to be there. And
I'm definitely lucky to be there.
I did read the culture at Tenants. I read it online, and it just sounds like an incredible place to be. So I really love the values that are spread there. And are you itching to get your foot in the door as a UX designer, but keep getting told you don't have enough experience? Your natural reaction, of course, is, how do I get experience if nobody will hire me? Imagine going from unemployed to employed UX designer in just 6 months. Now stop imagining, because what you only imagined is actually a reality with Springboard. Start today by studying online with an expert mentor to support you step by step. Transform your career with Springboard's UX Design Bootcamp course, where you'll build your portfolio working on real-world client projects, get your own dedicated career coach to find the best role for you, and find flexible payment plans that make it super easy to get started. With Springboard, you'll start your UX design job within 6 months of finishing your course, or your money back, guaranteed. Level up your skills and apply today at userdefenders.com/springboard. Don't forget to use special code USERDEFENDERS to receive $500 off tuition. You're the author of Designing with Web Standards, and that's really where a lot of it started for you, is really just wanting to share what you've learned as being really super early to web design, and really, like I mentioned earlier, the godfather, kind of one of the founding members of web design, I believe. And now I'm wondering, have you received any hate mail or tweets from web design or web standards purists over your decision to work at Automattic?
No, not a single one. The move to Gutenberg, you know, as the foundational system, was not without controversy. There was an accessibility problem, an especially keen accessibility problem for people with mobility issues in the admin of Gutenberg at first, rather than delay the launch. Again, people should know, Automattic, I hope I'm not misrepresenting this, but basically WordPress is its own thing. WordPress exists as an open source community. WordPress is made by lots of people who just make WordPress. And it's also made by people who make WordPress inside Automattic. Automattic helps fund a lot of WordPress development and design activity, but also a lot of that activity goes on completely independently. And so things like deadlines and when things launch, I mean, a typical company that has proprietary software, not open source software, that doesn't have outsiders working on it, will say, we're going to launch on such and such a day. And they're in charge of all their own decisions. A tricky thing about Automattic is that we're not entirely in charge of some decisions. I say we like I have anything to do with it. I don't. That's not my area. And I don't mean to speak for the executives at Automattic, but I can tell you activities happen and have a momentum of their own in the community and whatnot. So there was a need in the community to launch Gutenberg before that problem was addressed. And that's what happened. And WordPress took heat for it, and Automattic took heat for it, because Automattic takes heat whenever there's a WordPress decision people aren't happy with. Whether we made it or not, I'm not saying that we... I'm not trying to be Weasley here. I'm just trying to describe a complex situation. But anyway, sure. Immediately, there were people working on it passionately the whole time. I should tell you the story of how I came there. First of all, I have this magazine, listapart.com, since 1998 when we started. It's a web design journal. We publish about once a week. And we had been on another platform for quite a while. The platform was showing its age. We hadn't updated. It's all done by volunteers, all the work at Listapart. And volunteers always have other things to do first. They can't help that. That's just reality. If you have two tasks and one's going to feed your family and the other isn't, you have to do the feed your family task first, obviously. So we were sort of delayed, and a lot of people volunteered to help, but we were sort of stuck. And I was thinking, maybe it's time to move back to WordPress. Maybe Listapart had never been on WordPress, but I've been using WordPress since forever. And I thought maybe this would be a good home for us. So I reached out and they put me in touch with this secret special projects team that basically said, yeah, we'd love to help. and was really smart. They were willing to do a tremendous amount of work, which kind of floored me. And then I was really worried about Gutenberg and accessibility, so I asked to speak to the project leads at Automattic, and I did. And everything they said let me know they were like good people, serious people. They were working on the accessibility issues. They had constraints and deadlines that they hadn't set for themselves that they were working against. I knew the problem was going to get fixed. And that made me feel okay bringing the 40 or so people who volunteer on a list apart, the thought that maybe we should do this on WordPress. And some of them were nervous because of Gutenberg and the accessibility issue that was very out there at the time. They weren't worried about anything else. I mean, obviously, people, it's a list apart, which is a bunch of web geeks. So people were like, let's do a headless system. Let's use flat files. There was lots of talk. It was good talk. I decided WordPress was the way to go. And then I, in doing research about Automattic and WordPress, I noticed some things about their websites that I thought, I wonder if they're really telling their story as well as they could. So I reached out to Matt. Matt Mullenweg is someone I've known really since the beginning of WordPress, and when it wasn't even called WordPress. And I said I might want to do some consulting for you. And he said, I don't want to hire you as a consultant, but I would hire you as an employee. And I hadn't been an employee in 20 years. So I was like, wow.
How'd that make you feel?
It was scary and challenging because I had come to the point in working for myself for so long where I thought I'm stuck in my ways. I'm unemployable. So to have someone with this billion-dollar company and all the responsibilities they carry say to me, I'd like to hire you, that felt good. I was nervous. Can I really do this? But it felt good. We talked about the culture, you know, inclusive design, inclusive company, welcoming people, all very important parts of the company DNA, have been for a long time. There were so much that I liked. And then I started without any kind of commitment. I was just working on the list apart migration with Tiffany Bridge, who was a recent hire in the special projects team. And she was so remarkable on the folks she introduced me to were so remarkable and so thorough, and they seemed to have such good processes and documentation. I thought, this feels really good. And another thing I hated as an agency person running my own agency was having to figure out every process and document everything, and I kind of suck at that. I'm much better at big picture than I am at detail. And I thought, well, here's a team where that won't be, I don't have to be daddy. In my agency, I had to be daddy. It doesn't mean that there was anything childish about the people I worked with. They were brilliant and very professional and seasoned. But I, you know, if something fell through the cracks, it was me. If something went wrong, it was me. If there was a communication fault, everything came down on me. And I thought, here's a place where it's shared, almost like a commune. I don't want to sound hippie-ish, but like everyone definitely has individual responsibility, but there's also great shared team responsibility. So I don't want to turn this into a commercial for Automattic, but I thought this is great and I haven't been disappointed. We've been through some upheaval even since I've gotten there, and yet we've come out on the other side, I think, stronger. So I'm happy there. I'm really happy to be doing web design work inside a product company where I can learn. I'm involved in the products too, and I can learn from the product designers and from everyone who touches the product and everyone who interacts with the customer. The first thing that happened, user defenders, the first thing that happened is I spent weeks in rotation doing customer support. That's how everyone at the company starts. Whatever your job is eventually going to be, you have to do customer support first. And you get to see the humans that use the product and hear their problems and try to help them solve them. And it's a great, it's like learning to swim by having someone throw you over an airplane into the middle of a sea, but you learn to swim if that happened. And it's great. And everybody's super helpful. Like, you don't have to do it alone. People kept reaching out and said, you try to do what you can, and what you don't understand, you ask for help. So it was a really good opportunity to make human connections with. There's someone I chat with every week, beginning of the week and end of the week, who I don't actually work directly with, but they were just a nice person I met while I was doing customer support. So they were just a customer support person who was extraordinarily helpful and friendly. There's a high preponderance of nerds, people who hated camp, people who like reading. There's a high preponderance of intelligent people who need a little personal downtime every day. And yet there's really, it seems like a paradox, but I guess it's not. There's tremendous warmth and emotional support there, more so than the last time I worked for other people, which was 25 years ago and I was in advertising. Really brilliant people there too, but it was also very cutthroat and it was not about necessarily about sharing. It's about competing. So it's a relief to be able to work at a place where everyone wants you to do better.
That's so cool. I love that. And I'm so glad you shared that. It's really good for us to know, like a lot of times we get kind of myopic with being just at our own companies and only seeing kind of what's around us. It can be challenging to sort of know that there's other companies and organizations like Automattic that are doing it different and doing like some really outstanding stuff, especially with people. And I really like the whole onboarding of you get on the phone your first 2 weeks or whatever and talk to our customers before you even like sit down at your computer and like start pushing pixels or, you know, start strategizing over, you know, what this website should be or whatever. Like, I love that that's the first step is really just get that human contact, like talk to our customers. Like I just think that's really great and outstanding. And you know, when you're trying to get data for improving the experience, I think if you have a customer service department, they're the first people you should go and talk
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely.
Because, right?
They came, we had a design meetup in Arizona a month ago and they came, right? And the leader of the customer service team came and said, here's what they're complaining about. Here's where the pain points are. Because every product has pain points. Every product is constantly in need of improvement. If it wasn't, our jobs would be over, right? We could just
exactly.
We could just extinguish our civilization and go, oh, we did it. We're done.
Imagine a world where people don't have to feel lost, confused, or frustrated while trying to find and do things online. Now imagine a world where the right things are in the right places. Websites, apps, and intranets where people can easily find the things they're looking for. Optimal Workshop empowers you to build the world's best user experiences. Test, benchmark, measure, and make evidence-based decisions with confidence. If you're ready to create better experiences for your users, go to userdefenders.com/OW and try their tools for free today. I think my favorite answer to my design kryptonite question came from a gal named Alexa Harazimchuk. She said, my design kryptonite is utopia. If everything was perfect, we wouldn't have work.
Absolutely. I get design inspiration from being frustrated because I feel stupid and like things don't work and it's me. And I think, you know, my daughter, who's 14, came of age. She was 2 when the iPhone came out, so everything's completely intuitive for her. When I started using software, it was still like, put this donut on the outside of the PC. It tells you the commands to memorize to do these incredibly basic things. Please load the floppy disk that contains the entire program. And I have trouble with things that might be intuitive for others, but I think that makes me a better designer. The more thick-headed I am about certain things, the more I can spot problems that might bother other people too. It helps. There's no substitute for working with users, but being one yourself helps. I wanted to get back to one thing that I sort of glided past in your initial question, and I think I missed it, and it's a big opportunity. Another reason people say web design is dead, I think, is because there are so many tools, whether it's, you know, CMSs that are super powerful, it's frameworks. I mean, on the one hand, the frameworks are so complicated that you practically need a PhD in engineering to do some of the stuff that we used to do with HTML. And part of me rebels against that and says, you know, I loved it when it was HTML and a little CSS and a little JavaScript. Like, people could learn that. My friend Rachel Andrew, this world expert in CSS, she was a single mom when she started teaching herself web design, and she couldn't have done it today because it's too complicated today. So on the one end of the bell curve, it's so hard that nobody can do it. But on the other end of the bell curve, there are so many tools that a person who doesn't know what they're doing can grab and use to make websites that I think some people go, well, like, you know, I don't really have to be an expert because this tool A, B, and C exists, so anyone can do it. It's that anyone can pull the trigger MIDI story again. But I think the more you know what you're doing, I think whatever tool you use, you have to know what you're doing. And if you're using a tool because you don't know what you're doing temporarily, that's okay while you're learning. But if you're using a big, heavy platform to make a website, and yeah, you threw it together in a week and it seems like a good website, but it's inaccessible to some people, or it takes so long to load that most people on mobile are going to not bother dealing with it. You know, if it's not performant, if the content is bad, if you haven't shaped the content to help people find and shape the navigation to the user's needs, or people say, oh, well, pattern libraries, styles, design systems exist, so designers aren't necessary. Well, who makes design systems? Designers. And the fact that if your company has a design system, which means you've solved 80% of the problems out there, you know what that means? That means, and again, my friend Dan Mall says this, it means that the 20% of really interesting problems are there for the designer. First, the designer makes the design system. The design team makes the design system. Then there's this weird stuff we never thought about that's not minimum viable product, that's not lowest common denominator, that's complex and tricky. And that's where the designer gets to show their expertise. So web design isn't dead. It's more specialized. It's parts of it are easier, but doing it right isn't any easier in some way. If you use tools that put the burden on the user, you're doing it wrong. So use all the tools you need as long as they don't make the site slower or harder to use, or they don't start locking out different devices. As long as you're doing progressive enhancement and inclusive design and thinking about your customer and learning more about them all the time. But, you know, all those things I just said, those are hard. The name of your show is User Defenders. If that's what you are, that work will never go away. As long as there's people who need things and the internet is a way of providing those things, there's going to be a need for experts at various levels of experience and expertise to make stuff. And so our jobs aren't going away. It's just that some of the lower end jobs, like, you know, if someone used to be able to get a logo made for $90 and then make a website with Dreamweaver that was functional, or later make a website with Bootstrap that was functional, but they don't really know what they're doing and understand the technology, you know, then that's what they need to work on. There's always stuff to do and learn. I mean, again, not to pimp the company, but Automattic, they have this creed, right? This creed that says, like, I will always keep learning and I will share what I learn. And that's the web to me. So I think that's our jobs. I don't think our jobs are going away. They're just, we may be doing them in different places. We may be doing them with different tools, but we're still user defenders, like your show. We're still making stuff for people, not devices. That never goes away. We're still designers. Even if we're coders, we're designers. Designers solve problems for people.
Yeah, I love that. That's so well said, Jeffrey. I can't help but think about, and you touched on this, about the tools that are available. And many of these tools create code. Many of them will generate code. And I think that certainly we've seen an evolution toward at least somewhat more, a lot more standards compliant code. I mean, the original Dreamweaver was just like, you know, like completely just, what the heck is this? Like proprietary code, like good luck trying to debug it if you had to, like that kind of stuff. I mean, we've come a long way, certainly, with these tools, and depending on how you look at that. But I mean, we're even seeing like AI jump in, like artificial intelligence, like just predicting what your website design should be. And we're seeing a lot of just automation in our craft. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of questions buried in this context. And I guess one is, with all of these tools and with AI kind of taking over the world, like, is it even necessary to learn code now? And also, if you're a small business owner, why would you need to hire someone to design the website if it can be done through a tool like Squarespace, Wix, Webflow, or even WordPress?
Okay, well, let me address the second one first. If you're a business owner, you can't afford to hire a designer, and you have a pretty good handle on what you need, there are platforms out there. I hope you'll choose WordPress, but you could choose another platform that will let you make something fairly quickly that works. It's presentable, it's functional, it's good. It may have all the functionality you need in core, or there's an ecosystem, like a plugin ecosystem, that lets you add functionality.
So you mentioned bespoke design, bespoke web design.
Yeah.
I'm nostalgic. I know you are too, Jeffrey.
And definitely.
Just seeing this field evolve so much over the past 25 years, it's like I miss things. There's certain things that I miss, certainly, looking back and about web design. And you mentioned like the simplicity of it, just being able to know code, like some HTML, some CSS, and maybe even just a little JavaScript. And that's all you needed to know back then. And there's a nostalgia in me that just goes, man, I kind of wish it were more simple still. And then there's the other side of me that goes, well, there's a reason that it's gotten more complicated. And I think business is part of it. It doesn't make sense to hand code everything from scratch every single time, certainly from a business perspective, when you're on the clock and you've got deadlines and all that, and then that's where design systems come in and all that. But are there things that you miss about the Wild West of the World Wide Web? I'd love to dive into that.
I miss having not enough work to do so that I ended up redesigning my website every month. And for fun and to learn something new about web design. And I miss the culture where we all did that. I miss getting excited because Gina Ann or Dan Cederholm or whomever, Virla had just completely redesigned. And people were like, oh my, look at this, right? We would go and look and marvel at each other's work. And I think focusing on solving real world problems for real world people is probably a better use of our time in maturity, but I miss that. You know, I miss jamming. It's almost like, well, now you do the music for the Star Wars series. You're one of the orchestra members, and that's great. That's a great gig. But remember when you used to just pull your instrument out and jam on the corner, and other street musicians would come up and jam, and you all knew each other's names, and somebody would grab a harmonica? This is a really weird, dumb analogy, but
no way. Keep going.
It was wild and fun. I remember going to South by Southwest, and there were like 1,000 people attending Interactive, and they were all on my blog roll. And I knew I would go, oh, wow, you're youngdirtybastard.org or whatever. You'd just be like... It was amazing. It was amazing to meet people who were on your blog roll and hang out. And the medium matured. The business changed. Now, like 36,000 people attend South by Southwest Interactive, and that's awesome. And there's lots of opportunities there, but it's a very different experience. When we're nostalgic for the past, we're also nostalgic for our younger selves, when we had better muscle tone. Fewer responsibilities, there's no question.
Less hair in weird places.
I mean, I can remember struggling for a week to make a 2-column layout for a list of part when we switched from table layouts to CSS. And I had to work with two experts, Tantik Celik and Todd Farner, to pull off a masthead, 2 columns and a footer. Because CSS with floats, because the browsers were so incompatible, were so spotty in which what things they supported, because the specs hadn't really envisioned real layout systems, lots of reasons. And so when I think about, the good old days, actually struggling for a week to do a rudimentary layout, that's not so great. But I look at it now and go, things were so much better then, and now it's so terrible because it's so complicated. I wrote a piece about this a while ago at Zeldman.com and Automatic.design, but it published both places. It's called You Got This. And it's like, for me, feeling old and like I can't learn anything new and like I'm done, and then going, no, I can learn new things and it's okay. Like, where's that spirit I had when I was starting, where I would like dream in 4-color GIFs? I would wake up like solving really basic HTML problems, like solving table layout problems in my sleep in 1996, you know, like I was excited and it seemed, yes, it was rudimentary, but it seemed complex. It was hard. It was a new way of thinking. I don't think about the pain of all that and the frustration. Obviously, if we started the Web Standards Project, it was because nothing worked and we were frustrated. So, I mean, it wasn't all good news back then. And I love all the things we can do now. I just, I miss the simplicity. I miss the excitement, too, of someone just publishing their poem or whatever and finding other poets, or someone just blogging about their day. There's so much less of that. And I hope another reason I went to work at Automattic, again, not to plug the company, is because they're about blogging. They're about so much more. They're a platform that lets you do all kinds of things, business things, but in their DNA, in their origins, blogging. And I believe in that. I still believe in people valuing what they have to say and having the courage to share it with other people, even if they're not Hemingway, even if they're not the greatest. People writing about their fishing trips, even if they're not the greatest fisher person that ever lived. But you know what I mean? People writing about their design ideas, even if they're not the most famous designer in the world. People just sharing, I think, is really important. I think it's good spiritually. It's good for the world because we get to learn from each other and maybe respect and understand each other a little bit. I mean, we have, obviously, the internet can be used to push hate and push division, and we've seen that. But I do think with blogging, there's also the chance to say, I'm this kind of person and I feel this way. And here's how I felt when this happened. And for me to go, wow, I didn't think I had anything in common with this person on the other side of the world with this different belief system and this different kind of government. But obviously we do have something. We're both human and we're kind of more alike than I realized. I think that, I don't know that there will ever be world peace, but I do think that I still believe in the dream that technology can make the world a better place by enabling people to share, by removing the obstacles to communicating and sharing. And I'm glad to work in a place where I can do that. And I'm glad to work in a field, web design, that was started for that. Yes, we can do banking sites, but we started with people sharing documents. Like, you know, we're like, we started as cave paintings. We started as deep sharing. So I still love that. And that still inspires me. And I think we're still there. When I miss the past, I think, you know, we're still very much at the beginning.
This episode is also made possible by something super cool, an alternative to the .com domain name. It's the, drumroll please, .design domain name. Try saying that 5 times fast. So if you're a designer, and I know you are, and you've thought of a sweet name for your website that just isn't available under .com, check out .design. Chances are the perfect domain name you want is waiting for you on a bearskin rug. Okay, maybe not the rug, but wouldn't that be great? Head to userdefenders.com/porkbun now and use coupon code DEFENDERS on the checkout page to get literally a free year of a .design domain name bundled with free email hosting, Whois privacy, and even SSL certs. Don't wait. Grab your .design domain name now before someone else does. Go to userdefenders.com/porkbun now and use coupon code DEFENDERS.
Wow, that was so inspiring, Jeffrey. I miss the webmaster title a lot.
Huh.
You remember that?
I do.
We were just webmasters, and I kind of miss what that meant. We just kind of had to know how to do everything. And of course, back then, everything was a lot less than it is now. But it was just kind of like, you just felt that ownership. Like, this is my website.
Yeah.
I'm the webmaster. I own this. Like, I control this. It's like one of the few things that I actually own, maybe, like, truly own. Like, how many of us actually truly own our houses? Like, I pay a bank. I can say I own a house, but I really, truly don't until that mortgage is at zero. So it's just, I feel like the web, our websites something we can truly own. And Jeremy Keith is a great example of that too, where he's just, he publishes everything. I mean, even if it's like two sentences, he'll just publish it to his website. And he said, after I'm long dead and gone, like, hopefully my website will still be live and you can learn everything you need to know about me. But what would you like to see from our community, Jeffrey, like going forward? Like, how do we keep the spirit of web design alive? Like, what do you think is the path to do that? What is the path to get us all to jam a little more often? And by the way, I want to be invited to that jam session, Jeffrey.
Well, I think sharing is still the key. I think going to meetups, writing for publications like Smashing and A List Apart or anything, writing on your own blog, writing on Medium, sharing code, right on CodePen, sharing your designs on Dribbble. I think the spirit of it comes from little craft details that someone shares, right? Where you go like, oh, and especially problems people share, like, wow, Jen Simmons didn't know how to code that at first. Well, now I feel okay that I was frustrated, right? I think sharing not just expertise, but lack of expertise, just humbly sharing your reality, I think that is the spirit of the thing, and that we can still do that. It's hard now because sites are so complex and the businesses we make them for are so complex. It's not like the webmaster days where I did everything from Photoshop to the Perl script. It's like, no, like I have a little, I may not touch anything. So touching the metal, I mean, I think front end developers have it the best in a way because they're still touching the product. They're really touching the product in a way that you can't in Figma, right? Nothing against Figma. I'm not knocking Figma or Sketch or Photoshop or a pencil drawing, right? Like when I make a pencil sketch or a marker sketch, that's not the product that the user touches. So I think of all the things you can do in the web, the front end developer is closest to it, to the actual product, but and the back-end developer too, the actual product. But I think listening to each other, sharing with our colleagues, learning from our colleagues is how you keep the spirit together. I'm lucky in that I'm overwhelmed with so much new information to learn every day that I it's going to keep my brain functioning for another 10 years at least, right? I mean, I remember a woman I worked with at 30, she stopped listening to new music. She just kept listening to the same music forever. And it's okay to love the stuff you loved in high school, but it's also good to keep exploring new things so your brain doesn't shut off.
Neuroplasticity.
Above a certain age, our bodies are expendable. Not our spirits, but our bodies. Above a certain age, it's like, you know what? If you want to let it kind of go, just go to rot and, you know, your warranty's up. If you want to lay fallow in your life, you can do that. But I don't want to. So I think staying interested in learning new things and sharing.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Keith. I make websites and I fight for the users. You're listening to User Defenders Podcast with Jason Ogle.
I love that. So Jeffrey, as we close here, I just want to thank you again for your time. This has been super rich and inspiring. This is a field that I fell in love with right from the very beginning. I fell in love with this field. I fell in love with this work, and I'm still in love with it. I feel like sometimes there's lulls where the passion just sort of dies down a little bit, where I maybe don't get my hands dirty as often as I like. I'm certainly in a phase like that right now. And I think that it's on us, defenders, designers, web designers, it's on us to keep that passion alive and to never grow weary of learning and growing and trying things. I think that we can still keep that spirit alive. That's how the web started, was trying things and sharing things, as Jeffrey mentioned. And, you know, as we kind of started off with the whole conversation about the clickbaity articles about web design is dead, and I just want to note that one of the more popular articles that if you Google, the one that kind of ends up at the top, was this same author mentioned, you know, like says something to the effect that web design has no future. And then the same author also mentions that Facebook business pages are the future of business websites. So all that to say, you know, and this was written probably five to 10 years ago. all that to say, don't listen, don't believe everything you read. And certainly when it says something is dead in the title, don't just believe it. And the spirit of the web is alive and well, and it will remain. And so, and I highly recommend Jeffrey's article. He mentioned it's called You Got This. I was so moved by that article. You're such a great author and writer, Jeffrey. You're so real.
Jason.
You're real, and you don't hold back and just sharing exactly what you're going through, what you're feeling, and kind of your thoughts and philosophy on it. And that's one of those articles. It's one of those ones that really just draws you in. And I, anybody that's been working on the web for 5, 10, even, you know, especially 20 years or more, definitely read that if you haven't. It's very, very, I could identify immediately with what you're saying. And so I definitely will link to that, Defenders, in the show notes. Jeffrey, I just want to ask you about your contact information before we go. If you can tell
Jason,
our Defenders the best way to connect and keep up with you.
So I write, not often enough anymore, but I write at Zeldman.com. The best way to contact me is probably at Zeldman on Twitter. DM me there or send me a message there at Zeldman on Twitter. That's where I own your own content. That's where I post a lot of things that I'm noticing or thinking about quickly, things that don't require a full blog post or a full article. And that's a great place to reach me because I check it.
Awesome. Awesome. Definitely keep up with Jeffrey Defenders. And I also want to mention, Jeffrey, that I'm excited. I get to see you IRL. Is that what the kids say in real
life? That
is what
the kids
say. I get to see you in real life in just a couple of months, within a couple of months here at an Event Apart Denver.
That is right.
And yeah, right around the corner. I can't believe how quickly that's approaching.
It's upsetting me. Like our lives are just rushing past. Yeah, October 28th to 30th in Denver.
Yes.
And I'm really excited to go back to Denver and see you again and see our lineup and just see that town again. What a beautiful place. Although breathing is hard for me there because of the altitude.
It is challenging at first. I remember the last time that you were there was the first time actually that Event Apart had come to Denver.
Yes.
And I had the wonderful honor of recording a live podcast there. And I remember Luke W was on stage with me and I kind of like sort of ribbed him a little bit about how Google still hasn't solved the high altitude oxygen problem challenge yet. And then he said they're working on it.
Of course. Of course he said that.
So I'm super excited to be able to do that again, to be able to record a live podcast from the stage that I've revered for so many years. And so thank you for that great privilege and honor. And I, again, look forward to giving you a bear hug when I see you.
Cool.
Yeah. And Defenders, get your tickets for sure. It's going to sell out for sure. It did last year, actually probably a month or two before the event actually began. So, and that's right. We're about where we are now. So definitely get on the website. It's aneventapart.com. And if you use coupon code, I think it's AEAUD, you get $100 off. So take advantage of that and get out to Denver and come see us. Give us a hug.
Thanks, Jason.
Absolutely. And I just want to, as we close here, Jeffrey, I want to say you still got this, my friend. You still got this. And so thank you again for taking the time. Thanks for fighting so hard and for so long for a craft and a field that is just incredible and has been so good to so many of us and has made an impact on so many for so long. So keep going. And last but not least, I just want to say fight on, my friend. Anytime someone dies mysteriously, an autopsy is performed to determine the cause of death. For something to be declared dead, there will always be a traceable cause. When it comes to the field of web design and rumors of its death, ironically, neither the cause or killer has yet to be found. Has web design changed? Oh, most certainly. Have you changed in 25 years? I'm sure you have. I know I have. I'm glad I don't stare at my feet anymore when I walk around in public, or after 20 years of marriage, call my wife Sugar Booger. I never called her that, but we did have pet names for each other that would probably make veteran married people sick. We change, evolve, and improve. So does and should our craft, especially when it's rooted in the ever-evolving field of technology. I must say I feel incredibly honored and proud to have been around and in the trenches during the infancy of the commercial web, when we were all trying to figure things out and plow the paths into the evolution of the web. I remember starting the first online community to feature unsigned Christian bands and having to hand code 50 separate classified pages, one for each state, before the inception of database-driven websites. And of course, extensive user research. Turned out just like my Resist Massaging the Squirrel t-shirt, nobody wanted a classified section. I got to read Jeffrey's original blog posts on Zeldman.com as they were newly published. I got to engage with wonderful web design pioneers and former super guests like Eric Meyer and Nick Fink on Eric's CSS Discuss List, and many others like Christopher Schmidt on his David Siegel inherited High Five Babel list. I got to read web designer turned farmer Derek Powazek's beautiful and compelling Fray.com stories as they were newly published on Netscape Navigator. As I waited patiently, depending on how well the 28K dial-up modem was performing that day, I remember Netscape's nautical wheel animating in and out, trying so desperately to keep me entertained for those moments that the exhilaration for something beautiful, something moving, something generous would kilobyte by kilobyte populate my browser. Even if exciting websites like Fray or full flash websites like Gabacorp and anything Todd Pergeson's Juxta Interactive put out into the world would take a full 60 seconds to load, the anticipation of experiencing the meticulous and generous expressions of creativity and experimentation were always well worth the wait. No, web design isn't dead. The spirit of it is very much alive and well, and it lives within those of us willing to keep it alive and well for as long as we are blessed to draw breath this side of the earth. The web is full of generous, compassionate humans. In fact, some of the most generous and compassionate I've ever met in my 44 years of life. Jeffrey is certainly one of them. The web started with a heart for sharing out of a sincere desire to help others and tell impactful stories. And out of the sincere desire to help others and tell impactful stories came genuine human connection. And that genuine human connection is still at the heart of everything we do and should still do in web design. Is it possible to creatively break out of the box and tell impactful stories again while maintaining accessibility? I think so, especially with progressive enhancement. And I think now more than ever, web design could use another creative storytelling renaissance to help keep its spirit alive. Let's all do what we can to keep the spirit of web design alive and thriving, and join that jam session that Jeffrey talked about. The Beatles changed the world, and they were just four guys with four instruments. Let's see if we can change the world again with 40 million plus guys and gals in our horde of Texas instruments. In the process of keeping web design alive, let's just be sure to leave the Do Not Resuscitate tags hanging on the marquee and blink tags. Tweet your takeaways, defenders. I'm at UserDefenders, and Jeffrey is at Zeldman. Did you know that User Defenders has an online community of passionate, inspiring designers, both web and UX? It's a wonderful place with some incredible people to inspire one another and to offer encouragement, accountability, and even mentorship. I want to invite you to check it out at community.userdefenders.com, and you can get your first 7 days for free. After that, it's only $9.99 a month, or I think $99 a year, which isn't too bad considering it's even cheaper than a streaming subscription. It's a little bit more than Disney Plus though, at least out the gate, but I guarantee you, give it a year, Disney Plus will be more expensive than Netflix, I'm sure. I want to thank Caesar Lemus for the awesome artwork he did for Jeffrey's first appearance on User Defenders. You can check out the artwork and mention links for this episode on the show notes page at userdefenders.com/066. And by the way, you can also check out Jeffrey's first appearance on this show, and I highly recommend you do, by visiting userdefenders.com/Zeldman. This was the first two-part episode I've ever done, and Jeffrey dives deep into his origin story and is super vulnerable and transparent in this wonderful, timeless interview. I also want to remember to thank Darren Goldsmith, as I've forgotten the past few episodes. He's been helping me out a great deal with the show notes and all that goes into that, with images and transcript and everything. So thank you so much, Darren. I appreciate you. I want to thank today's sponsors, Springboard, Optimal Workshop, and Pork Bun. Please do check out their offerings and support them as they support this show. It all works together for good. So you can check out their offers again on the show notes page over at userdefenders.com/066. In 2 weeks, John Whalen, PhD, will talk to us all about his brand new O'Reilly published book, Design for How People Think. This is an amazing book. I really enjoyed reading it, and we dive deep into all of what this means, designing for how people think. So super fascinating one. Be sure to subscribe at userdefenders.com/subscribe to automatically receive it on your podcast playing device. That's it. I appreciate you hanging in for, I feel like I had a lot to say, a lot more than normal, just because I have so many roots in this field. This is where it all started for me, and I really care deeply about it. It's been so good to me and my family for the past 25 years. Thanks so much for listening, Defenders. I sincerely appreciate you for tuning in faithfully and talking about the episodes on Twitter and elsewhere and telling your other designer friends about this show. It really, truly means a great deal to me. So I appreciate you. And until next time, as always, fight on, my friends.
Goodbye.